everyone, I'm Mark Cooper and welcome to our latest Rethink Energy podcast. Agri-PV, the combination of agriculture and photovoltaics, offers exciting opportunities for renewable energy, agricultural businesses and farmers. As a result, it's attracted much media and political interest. By combining green energy generation with food production, it brings together two of society's core needs. It also creates dual land use opportunities, which means instead of competing for space, they become complementary, particularly relevant in many parts of Europe where available land is at a premium. And most recently, we've seen both energy security and food protection come into sharp focus given the war in Ukraine. In this episode, we discuss the current status, challenges and opportunities of agri-PV, the potential of this new technology, and draw on real-world examples. We'll also look ahead to what the future may hold. Joining me to discuss this are my colleagues, Stefan Schindler, Head of Project Management, Agri-PV, Simona Scivioni, Project Manager for Solar Projects in Italy, and Benoit Roux, Head of Solar Projects France. I hope you enjoy this episode, and don't forget to check out other podcasts and content at rethink-energy.com. Welcome, Stefan, Simona, and Benoit.
Yes, hello.
Hello. Hello.
Okay, so we'll dive straight in with a pretty big first question. As we know, transitioning to renewables is essential if we're going to avert the worst effects of the climate crisis. And food production is also essential to our future and is under threat in many regions due to climate change. And we see both competing for land in many countries. Agri-PV looks to have answers to both of those. And I thought we'd just start with a question talking through some of those benefits to agri-PV. What are some of the latest technological advances? And is it really the game changer that it appears to be? Stefan, maybe if you'd like to start and pick up on some of those comments around land use, efficiency and crop protection.
Yes, thank you. Well, the benefits for agri-PV are very diverse. And I think we should appreciate that the farming sector as such is also very diverse. So if we change our PV generator in such a way that we can support the farming sector to become more climate neutral or even climate positive, to be adapting to climate change, I think that's a huge benefit. And then we look into the different sectors we find in the farming area. And then we see, for instance, with special cultures, we have fruit voltaic, where we are able to protect the cash crops like berries or apples with our solar panels. So we don't just produce green electricity, but we also give a add-on function to our panels, which is the protection. When we look in corn and grain production, or also vegetable production, we see that we have some learnings from agroforestry system, where we have a parallel use of land, like an interspace cropping between tree rows. In our case, it's photovoltaic rows, where we can create a microclimate, where we can actually give wind protection there and therefore reduce the soil erosion. So depending on what application of agri-PV look on, we can fit this to the farming sector and then create benefits and, of course, also diversify the income of the farmer. We know that the farming sector, they have to become climate neutral, they have to adapt to climate change. It's a high risk sector, actually, the farming sector, but having less or low returns. And if you are able to give economical benefits to the farmer, that's also of help. There's one solution we currently look at. It's cow voltaic. Yeah? We have some experience with sheep. Now we also go into cow, but I think, Benoit, you are the person who knows best about cow voltaic.
As you said, Stefan, we have some very, very positive experience with sheep so far, and this has no secret anymore. We have experimented this synergies and cohabitation on the same grasslands with PV installations and sheep breeding on site. This has brought very spectacular effects by preserving much longer in the season the quality of grass and by stopping the light, the excess of irradiation in summertime in particular on the grass, and preserving the evaporation and keeping the humidity on the grounds. And now we are looking to extend this solar grazing to other kind of animal breeding, such as cows. So in France in particular, where I'm working, there's a huge, huge potential. We have a lot of cow breeding all over the country, and there is already a huge demand to have also those kind of systems compatible with cows. Of course, we have other challenges because it's different animals. Of course, the size of the animals, the strength of those animals is nothing comparable to what we have with sheep. And we have to ensure the security, of course, of the animal, because this is also made to increase the animal welfare and to secure the security of the PV installation.
And in terms of what we're kind of looking at here to kind of paint a picture, with the PV panels, do we have kind of animals or crops around the panels, or are they under the panels, or how does this kind of combination work?
They are, of course, under the panels, but as well as around. One of the points is to provide some shade for the animals. I spoke about animal welfare, but this is one of the points to provide some fresher, some cooler areas where they can stand during summertime, for example, as well as they can hide from heavy rains or hail when those events happens. All across the year.
And is that the same for crops as well, Stefan?
Well, for the crop voltaic solution, it is more in between the rows. So below our tracker system, for instance, there is more flower strip, which is nice for biodiversity. But the actual farming process takes place in the space between the rows. And then we have different zones. So the zone one is the one closest to the tracker, which has the highest impact of shading, microclimate, cooler temperature, and so on. The zone two is like having boundary effects and impacts, but not so much. And in the zone three, which is right in the middle between the PV rows, there is hardly any impact. So when the farmer is harvesting, he has like an average yield of this entire area between the rows. And we see from our first harvest we conducted from RWA, a client from us in Austria, yeah, that the results are very promising. So we were harvesting winter wheat between the tracker rows 2 weeks ago. And now we are analyzing the results, but it looks very promising, yes.
And yields are, or how are yields affected on crops? Is it comparable? Are they reduced somewhat if you're combining with solar, or is there any kind of compromise there?
At the moment, I think in Europe, in many member states of the EU, we see a big heat wave. It's very hot, it's very dry, and there is for weeks and maybe even months no rain. So the soil is becoming very hard, yeah? And in case it does rain, the water is just flown away, yeah? So it cannot go into the soil anymore because the soil is so hard. And if we are able to provide shade and also a cooler temperature, we avoid water evaporation, we avoid transpiration in the plant, so the sweating of the plant in case of too much heat and high temperature. And this all leads that actually the crop is not decreased, the yield, but actually increased. And therefore, we can harvest more.
And obviously, it's a relatively new technology, and I would assume a very fast-moving technology. We just had the AgriVoltaics conference in Italy a month or so ago, where the industry came together, and I know you were there. Kind of, what are we seeing, or what were you seeing at that event in terms of how AgriPV is progressing in terms of technology, in terms of markets around the world that are opening up? What's the latest?
Yeah, the AgriPV conference was very interesting and useful to understand the market trend of AgriPV around the world. We have seen, for example, some crops like tomatoes and soil, about which we have not experiences, but on other countries, yes. And it was also useful, the knowledge exchange and the know-how exchange with other countries. We've seen a presentation of a Chinese girl who shows us that it is possible to have a gigawatt AgriPV project.
And when we're talking large scale, I mean, again, put that into perspective. And what are most of the typical projects out there at the moment? And then what would large scale look like? Stefan, did you want to come in on that?
I want to pick up on the China story and maybe Asia. If you see that in Asia, on cropland available per capita, we see in Asia a lot of people and hardly any cropland available. That means that the pressure on available food production area is very, very high. And at the same time, of course, we see that the available cropland is threatened by climate change. is threatened by economic growth, because we need infrastructure, we need industrial area, we need also the energy transition in these nations. So we see that the value of cropland is actually increasing. And in China, the Chinese government decided in the year 2017 already to introduce a red line for ground-mounted photovoltaic on arable land. And thereby, they called this PV plus. That means photovoltaic had to add some techno-ecological synergies when implemented on arable land. And this can be with Aki PV, but also with aqua PV, meaning with fish production or shrimp production, for instance. It can be in the combination with greenhouses, so solar greenhouses. And when we see that in 2021, there was a GIZ report released only a few months ago, yeah, that 50 gigawatt of Aki PV have been registered in only 1 year in China. This is the biggest market segment in China, Aki PV. And the average size of a project was 103 megawatt. So, we don't talk about small scale, nice, easy installations. We really talk about utility scale Aki PV solutions. And to be honest, again, as I say, it's with fish production, it's with berry production. Simona referred to this 1 gigawatt plant. It's with goji berries. So when we look in Spain, for instance, where we have very large berry production areas, or in the Netherlands also, yeah. Well, yes, we also have the area potential. What we are missing is the regulation that is supporting this dual use of land. But there is a debate going on, and I think what you mentioned at the intro with the war in the Ukraine, we see that the food security becomes more and more important, and I think we should use our arable land very, very efficient. And Aki PV compared to a monofunctional land use is, of course, increasing the limit, the efficiency of the limited land that we have available. When we look to Japan, in Japan, over 3,000 Aki PV installations are already operating. They have signs of more than 140 crops growing under Aki PV. That means there is a huge knowledge on what crop goes well and which doesn't go well. So to further optimize, I think there is a huge potential in the future, how the combination can go well. And in Europe, of course, also highly populated, also an import market of food. So also the European Union has to import food from outside, especially also feed. And this means that I see the trend that comes from Asia on solar sharing actually also coming to Europe now, and more member states are supporting Aki PV. I think France was the first one in 2017. I think the German government is now picking up on that. And also the European Commission made some statements about Aki PV. And in this trend, I think, you know, Aki PV is a young technology. It's a young solution with only, let's say, 3, 4, 5 years experience. Looking to ground mounted, we have 20 years of experience at least. I think if we meet again in 10 years from now, we will see that Aki PV, you know, is a trend that has been growing. And I hope that our solutions, especially with our mother company coming from the agriculture sector, the BayWa AG, that we actually have a great competence and competitive advantage, as we know, farming very well. And also solar. So if we leverage the synergies we have within our company, actually we have a good setup to be an active participant in this market.
And you mentioned about China, that we had our last podcast on floating PV, which is a similar discussion on where the biggest projects are and where they're moving most quickly. And China's on a whole other scale there as well. But where we touched on Europe, but focusing more on Europe, what are the markets there that are kind of interesting now and you think will be for the future? Obviously, Stefan, you're very familiar with Germany, Benoit, France, Simona, Italy. Should we just kind of do a little round robin and get an update on each market and where we are and where we think we're going to be in the future? Benoit, we mentioned France. Did you want to just expand a bit on there and where we are at the moment and where things are going?
Yeah, I think France has a huge potential for Agri PV. Obviously, we're one of the bad student for PV in Europe. We are just hitting the 14 gigawatt mark, which is kind of ridiculous if we compare to all our neighbors and comparable countries in Europe. So we are far behind our targets for installation of PV. And at the same time, France is the biggest agricultural country in the EU. So it's as simple as that. I mean, we have a very logical combination here that makes the potential of Agri PV very, very interesting. So France has, I think, seen this possibility already quite some years ago by putting in place the very first support mechanism enabling AgriPV to secure a viable tariff for the valuation of the energy produced, which for some application of AgriPV is needed. Because one of the main principle of AgriPV, as we said already, is to give some services first to the agricultural activity and not take 100% of what can be optimized for the electricity production. So the consequence is that the price of the electricity, the AgriPV electricity, is a bit higher than other kinds of PV installations. So yeah, the potential is great, and I think AgriPV will take a large stake of what is coming up ahead of us for PV installation in the coming decade.
And are we seeing that a similar situation in Italy, Simona?
We have a great potential for the AgriPV, but at the moment we are in the beginning stage of the definition of regulations, laws about AgriPV. Our government is trying to give us a regulation to improve the installation of AgriPV, which is, I think, is great. Of course, it's a route to define also the funding mechanism for the installation of AgriPV. We have only a draft at the moment with two different mechanisms for the funding of this kind of plants, which is of one end a capital contribution, which is correlates with the National Recovery and Resilience Plan, and on another end a feed-in tariff mechanism. So it's about the energy production. And this is important because at the moment here in Italy, for example, the photovoltaic is expensive to develop. And another important aspect at the moment is that we are actively working with the Italian Electrotechnical Committee to define specification of AgriPV technology. So we are pioneer of AgriPV here in Italy, basically.
So again, a huge potential, some understanding, I guess, on different sides in terms of unlocking that potential. How does that look in Germany, Stefan, and also in the Netherlands, where we've been a trailblazer in terms of AgriPV and projects there?
Maybe before we go into Germany and Netherlands, you allow me to comment on what Simona just said with these standardization and quality assurance of AgriPV. I think that is really crucial because most policymakers, if they are now aware of AgriPV and willing to support that, they have to know what actually is AgriPV and to avoid alibi or pseudo AgriPV installations. So they have to make a high quality assurance. And this is also what we see in many markets there, that they start with a definition, with a standard of AgriPV. And I think that dialogue, this process of finding a common understanding of AgriPV is very crucial. And once this understanding is established, they are able to design support mechanism and funding mechanism. And I think in particular in Germany, we have been successfully in this dialogue with science and industry, with the farming sector and the energy sector to come up with such a standard. It's the DIN specification where we defined AgriPV. And this has then been translated into many other languages, English, Dutch, Polish, French, and so on, because we see a high demand also from other member states to learn from this process that has been going on in Germany.
And you mentioned lighthouse projects there. I mean, are there some examples that, you know, that you've all got that come to mind in terms of those? Yeah, a perfect illustration of how things should work and we can have more of in the future. Benoit, France?
Yeah, in France, we have a couple of symbolic and lighthouse projects, as Stefan mentioned. I think there's one of them I'd like to mention is our project Saint-Jory, located in the Dordogne area in the southwest of France, where we have a very historical and traditional culture of truffles. And there we have found a very interesting site that will be converted to conventional corn production to fields of oak trees with the point of producing truffles. So basically, that's an inter-row agri-PV project. So where those oak trees that are usually cultivated as bonsai trees, we try to limit the size up to 1.50 meters, 1.40 meters, not more. And so we would plant those trees in the inter-rows and take the benefits of the modules to provide some shade on the roots of those oak trees. Where this delicious mushroom develops on the ground near the roots, and this shade will definitely help the yield of those oak trees to increase and adapt better to the unfortunate climate change that is deeply affecting the production of truffles.
And Stefan, what about for you in terms of those lighthouse project examples?
For BayWaRE, clearly the project in Barberich with the raspberries is a cool lighthouse project in the fruit sector for fruit voltaic with the farmer Pete Albers. It's actually a tourism site now. Yeah? It's like so many farmers from all over Europe go there and visit the site, also press. And we are really proud on this project. And to be honest, when I'm there, it's really touching also to see the raspberries growing under solar panels. It's such a wonderful atmosphere, and I'm just happy that this project goes so well. And finally, this year, we will build the project Algendin, where we also see some interspace cropping, so food production, grain production between the PV rows. However, here we really have the food energy water nexus. We will harvest the water with our PV panels and seasonally store it, so the water, the rainwater that we have a lot of in the winter time, we will store this for the summertime when there is hardly any water, and then we have the soiling problem on our PV panels. And instead of competing in the summer with the farming sector on water for cleaning our panels, we will actually use our collected water to clean the panels and therefore diminish the conflict on water. And honestly, I think water will be super scarce in Europe in the next decades to come, unfortunately. And if our solar solutions, and I don't think this is only true for AKPV, I think also our conventional ground-mounted systems can collect water and have a seasonal water storage and then actually support the food energy water nexus to come and happen.
And you mentioned technology, Stefan, and one of the early lighthouse projects, which wasn't that long ago, but things have moved forward quickly in terms of technology since then. I mean, can you give us an overview of how that's evolving on the technical side of agri-PV and the speed at which that's also evolving?
Yeah, we can start with fruit voltaic, where we use a special light transparent PV panel. And with different suppliers, we configured different degrees of transparency. And we matchmake this with the light saturation point of a special plant, whether this is apple or berry. And then we can really find the optimum of photon management. And maybe you allow me to elaborate on this a little further. For me, it's really fascinating when you see the sun beam having its light spectrum and that the biomass production needs the red light spectrum and the photoelectric effect needs the green light spectrum. So in theory, actually, they don't compete on the energy because we can just separate it in such nice way that both have enough energy to produce biomass or photovoltaic electricity. So in the PV panels, there is a lot of innovations going on. There is foils integrated to allow harvesting more UV light, concentrating the UV light into the space between the cells within the model. There is also a supplier, Insolite from Switzerland, that has a PV panel that is tracking the light within the panels. So we look very closely to what are the trends in the market that are going on to further optimize this light management in the fruit voltaic projects. And when we talk about the substructure, again, of course, we want to have the highest quality at lowest cost. So again, there is a lot of innovation being made with tracking systems, for instance, with different ways of structures, how to integrate this in fruit voltaic, but also in cow voltaic. There is different ways on how we can bring the cow below the panels, and we need to find out what is the best way for the cow, but also for us in a techno-economical sense. And for interspace cropping, I can give you some insights here. For instance, when you grow corn, corn is growing, 2.5-3 meter high. Then at one stage, it's interfering with our tracking panels and shading the panels. So of course, we don't want that. Yeah? So then we have to change the program on how panels are steered on our tracking system. Yeah? So the higher the corn is growing, the more horizontal the PV panels will track. And so we don't, can just east-west track here, but we then have to change the program, let's say, in this tracking mechanism.
And the list of benefits is pretty exhaustive. It's green energy production combined with food production, benefits for the farmer, climate change resilience, on and on they go. Are there any negatives? Does it have an impact on land prices, on food prices? Are there any sort of considerations here that need to be thought through further in terms of its wider rollout?
I think a negative aspect is the landscape impact that we have, but this is not only true for Aker PV. I guess this is we will see more debates on that on a very local level when we install. Photovoltaic needs space, and then we have to think how much space we need. And of course, the more megawatts you get per hectare, the better it is, because then you need less space. So then it's a matter of looking into the restrictions what we have. Yeah? So in Italy, for instance, Simona, you know much better than I think they want Aker PV to take place in the surrounding of industrial areas. This is already impacted surroundings. Yeah? And I think that is a good way, yeah, how to handle that.
Did you want to come on that, Simona, and expand a bit on that?
At the moment, the regulation says that in a buffer of 3 kilometers from industrial area, it is possible to install agri-PV plants with simplification in the authorization procedure, particularly in the environmental impact analysis. As Stefan told before, the environmental impact, of course, not only for the agri-PV, but the PV plants in general, is high in some lands and some regions here in Italy. It's a crucial point during the authorization procedure. So having the possibility to install this kind of plants is important, because we have the possibility to have some suitable area without our classical problems in Italy during the environmental analysis procedure.
And yeah, I'm talking of all those benefits. The answers we're getting from the markets would seem to be, yeah, that they are realizing them. And it's, it's just a question of how quickly things will move forward, rather than whether they will move forward at all, which is hugely exciting. We are almost up on time, and a topic I'm sure we're going to return to again, but just kind of one classic final crystal ball related question. So, where do we see this going next? What are some of the big things to look out for in terms of, markets that are around the corner, or kind of key steps that we'll be taking in agri-PV over the next kind of 3, 4, 5 years? Stefan, would you want to start with your predictions?
I think that agri-PV will be part of the farming business. And it is really a major change, because farmers in the past, when we look back hundreds of years, they always have been producing energy, the farmers. In the past, it was maybe feed for cows and for horses. Then there was biomass production for biogas and ethanol and aquafuels. And I think photovoltaic as such will become allowed to be understood as an agricultural business. So the use of the photoelectric effect, not just the biomass effect. With this understanding of the farmer that, yes, I am an energy producer with solar technology, I think they will go for Aker PV. And this will mean that the status of farmland will remain, even though we produce electricity. This will help the permitting. And then, of course, it will allow also the farmer to have all his privileges that he remains in place. And therefore, I think the most demand will come from the farming sector for AKPP. And this is actually exactly what we want. And it's like on eye level, you know, we are in a partnership here where we have to guarantee that the farmer has benefits from that, ecological benefits, but also economic benefits. And of course, we need to have the energy transition as soon as possible. We have to decarbonize. We should help the farmer to adapt to climate change. And if I look all these advantages and seeing the great potential of farmland that is out there, the need to do something to maintain this farming process, I think AKPV will emerge to a very strong segment within the PV industry. And my prediction is at the moment in our pipeline, AKPV is maybe 2 or 3%. And I think in 10 years from now, maybe it will emerge to 20 or 30% compared to the rest of ground-mounted and also rooftop. Yeah.
And Simona, for you?
I totally agree. I receive a lot of requests from farmers who want to have the benefit from the AKPV. For example, water or crop protection. So I think that the world are seeing the AKPV as an opportunity. And it's important to be here to develop this kind of project because we need that. We need because of the climate change. We need for the energy transition. So, yes. I hope for the future that we have big number from AKPV.
And Benoit, for you?
Yeah, well, my prediction is that the percentage of AKPV in BayWa/Aries pipeline and any other developer's pipeline will be even much higher than what Stefan said, because it's an obvious match, as we've discussed, between two main and strategic economical sectors, agriculture and energy. And by the times we're living, where we see that those two sectors are experiencing some very hard times in terms of availability, in terms of price. So it's obvious that they will develop and that any mechanism, any combination that will help those two sectors to develop jointly and ensure their sustainability resilience throughout the times and the answer to the incredible challenge that we are facing with rising population over the world, it's obvious that it's going to work. But of course, everyone has to understand this. And we need to have a regulatory framework and support mechanism to enable this rocket to take off.
Huge potential. Let's hope we can unlock it. Thank you all. Okay, we are up on time on another Rethink Energy podcast. Thank you all for joining me, and special thanks to our guests, Stefan, Simona, and Benoit. Don't forget to check out other podcasts and content at rethink-energy.com, and speak to you all again soon.